The Three Date Opportunity by Annie D. Scaramouche. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Fine, Steve says at last, which makes Tony straighten up in surprise. Yes, let's do it. Oh, shit, okay. Tony quickly checks the calendar on his phone before Steve can change his mind. You won't regret this. Let's pick a day. Friday good for you? Steve thinks. Friday's fine. Great. Tony beams, then figures that his face is probably doing something unnervingly enthusiastic and or smug, so he modulates his smile into a variation that's less likely to make Steve run for the hills. Steve unfortunately sees right through the effort, though he seems too bemused to come up with a cutting reply. It's tempting to break the tension with a joke, but to diffuse the awkwardness would also undercut Tony's intentions. Because Tony's dead serious here. He wants three dates. Three exactly. And Steve just said yes. Steve's still unconvinced that Tony meant it, let alone that he's not going to make a farce of the endeavor at Steve's expense. So Tony's mission to convince him starts now. Set the clock. Hence, it is with great effort that Tony dives deep into himself and drags out what little Steve-shaped earnest sincerity he can muster and says, thank you. Even if you're not into it, I really appreciate that you're giving me a shot. Steve's mouth quirks a little, amused, polite, and mildly cautious. Okay. Then, because Tony does have his limits, he adds, there'll be a pop quiz at the end, though, so you got to pay attention. Right, Steve says with a laugh, and Tony grins right back at him. Steve has no idea what he's in for. Tony mentally rubs his hands together and starts planning. Tony can do this. He can. He's older and wiser now, comparatively. His appalling romantic history is merely a base point from which to not make the same mistakes with Steve. That's all. Besides, isn't Tony's whole thing a story of redemption and recovery? Tony has three dates with Steve, and he's going to make them count. Fact one, Steve hasn't been on many dates in his life. Admittedly, this is more conjecture than cold hard fact, and was cobbled together from the few times Tony heard Steve wryly mention his inexperience in the same breath as losing most of his friends in one fell swoop. That said, a lack of experience doesn't equal a desire to do all the things in order to catch up. Tony is the sort of person who'd do a dating speed run to binge on what he's missed. Steve is not. Probably not. Tony's knowledge of the intricacies of one Steve Rogers is sadly limited, but he thinks that this particular instance weighs heavier on the likelihood that Steve just doesn't care about the dating scene that much. Steve is less about the wistful sighs and more about the subtle eye-rolling whenever Natasha heckles him. Thus, Tony's choice to go with a low-pressure destination for their first date. Friday, when it rolls around, sees Tony taking Steve on a leisurely drive out of Manhattan to a diner he sometimes goes to with Rhodey when they're on the East Coast. It's nothing fancy, but the burgers are great and milkshakes better, and Tony has gone there often enough to know that their photos aren't going to end up splashed all over the internet before the night is out. Steve exits the car and takes it in. This it? Tony tries not to sound too eager. Did you want something else? We can do something else. No, it's just... Steve's face moves over the way it does when he thinks he's missed some cultural context and is trying to decide how much he cares about it. But then he looks back at the small place, with its pretend neon billboard and row of booths inside, and smiles. Let me guess. Burgers? Naturally. Tony knows what Steve was expecting, no matter that he already told Steve to dress down tonight and relax. No ties or jackets, Tony said, and Steve asked again two more times to be sure, as if he thought that he heard wrong, or that Tony was going to pull a fast one on him. As if. Fact two. Steve isn't sure if he's into men. but he's open to the idea. Response: Tony is extremely mindful of Steve's personal space. When they walk up to the diner together, Tony keeps pace and minds his elbows, making sure not to knock Steve's giant arms. Tony opens the door for Steve, who raises his eyebrows but acknowledges the gesture with a small smile and does not touch any part of his body as Steve moves past him. They get a booth at the far end, and as they sit, Tony mentally marks an invisible border bisecting said booth that he will do his best not to encroach tonight. "You're familiar with this place," Steve observes. "Lady nodded at you when we came in." "Yeah, I come here sometimes." Tony plucks the menu and slides it towards Steve. "It's cozy, people keep to themselves, that kind of thing. Anyway, I may be here for a burger, but the grill's pretty good too. You're hungry, yeah? You forget to feed yourself sometimes after a mission." Steve scowls, but there's no heat in it. Spoken as someone who often does the same. "Exactly. So I know what I'm talking about." Tony taps the menu. "Don't miss the mashed potatoes, the gravy. I know you've been craving that lately. See, I pay attention. Well, sometimes." "Sometimes," Steve concedes. Then he sobers. "I don't mean that in an unkind way." "Yeah, I know." "No, not like that. I know that you have a lot going on in that head of yours at any given moment." Tony tries not to feel too flattered about Steve's lenient observation. The guy thinks the same about everyone. "But you try." "Sometimes," Tony echoes, hopefully threading the fine line between self-deprecation and cheek. It seems to land, judging from Steve's amused huff. "Thanks." When the waitress comes by to take their orders, Steve goes along with all of Tony's suggestions. The evening starts with easy talk about work and the rest of the team and catching up with what the other has been doing lately. Nothing deep or profound, because this is warm-up, testing the waters, getting Steve to relax. After all, there's not just the physical element of Steve's comfort zone to consider, but his mental, emotional comfort zone too. They may have been working together as Avengers for over a year now, and have been somewhat proper friends for maybe two-thirds of that time, and that's being generous about it. But they're not close. They barely ever hang out together when there's just the two of them, and never outside the tower. Tony could admit that for a while now, he's been wishing that he did know Steve better, and boy, was that a revelation when he recognized his irritation for what it was. Having the hots for Steve? Yes, that was sensible. Just look at the man, etc. Wanting Steve to aim that small, pleased smile of his at Tony as often as possible. No. Terrible. Why does Tony care so much? Ah, it takes so much work. But he'd ask Steve out anyway, and here they are. "I know we're supposed to all help out around the tower," Steve is saying, "but I'm a terrible cook, and I just can't subject you guys to that." "What, you feel guilty about it?" Tony asks. "I burn things I'm pretty sure are supposed to be inflammable. Anyway, I know Bruce appreciates it when you do all the slicing and dicing for him, so you're pulling your weight, and then some. Clint taught me, can you believe it? I used to..." Steve trails off for a moment, a little self-consciously, then continues. "I did try to help my mother around the house back in the day, but my hand-eye coordination wasn't that great. Now, though, Clint's just got to show me once, and the body knows what to do. Once I got the hang of it, I'm faster than him." Tony laughs. "Bet he didn't care for that." "You're not wrong." The corners of Steve's eyes crinkle when he smiles. "See, Tony's doing so good. The small talk is small and inconsequential and continuous. Steve hasn't looked bored or offended even once. And Tony hasn't made a single dirty joke all evening, since he's minding the aforementioned fact that Steve's still new to the concept of dating a man. That dating men topic even gets brought up. While Steve's going through his second wind of biscuits and extra gravy, it also marks a shift from small talk to less small talk, along with the slow opening of Steve's body language, which are further winds. "Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not usually like this, is it?" Steve says. Men in courtship. Is that the word? Going out together. I want to say that it can be like that, but I don't actually know. Tony gestures at himself. I'm an outlier, I've been told. But you have gone out with men. With intentions. Maybe try to make that sound a little less ominous. Steve purses his lips. You know what I mean. Yes, fine. God, Tony says with a laugh. Of course I have. And no, I've never done it like this. Why are you asking? It's not what you thought it'd be. Well, it's... While Steve ruminates on that, he folds the last of his fries into a salad leaf and shoves it into his mouth. He chews, swallows, and holds Tony's gaze thoughtfully throughout, as though daring Tony to make sense. This just feels like dinner. Tony sips his coffee. Because it is dinner, Steve. We could have done this anyway. You didn't have to ask me for a date. Maybe. What's that supposed to mean? There's fact three, which is, Steve isn't into Tony. And this one is a fact, which has been confirmed by the man himself. Steve had been very apologetic about it, too, when Tony first prodded him for a date. Steve may know Tony better than the average Joe off the street, but that's in the capacity of a friend and a co-worker. Tony's reasonably certain that Steve's learned not to take Tony's public reputation at face value anymore, but not all of that reputation is untrue. Tony is a lot. A handful. Two or more handfuls. Anyone who isn't braced for it, even someone like Steve who can roll with a lot, will be overwhelmed, and that's just the reality of it. Tony doesn't want Steve to be overwhelmed. It means that I can slow down, Tony says. People think that I can't, that I can't read a room, but I can when I focus or whatever. So right now I'm showing you that I can, and I'm doing this because I like you, and you're worth it. Steve blinks a little, shoulders hunching up slightly. Tony thinks about retreating, but Steve's blue eyes are steady and alert, sharp. They meet Tony's. And stay there. Gratitude steadies Tony's limbs, keeps him grounded. Steve said yes, and he's here. Steve. So unreadable, and so difficult to understand at times. Has granted Tony his full attention tonight, with no one else to distract him, and Tony feels drunk on it, giddy. The man's so fucking handsome in his dumb, off-the-rack polo shirt and khaki pants. His hair unstyled but crisp, his collar slightly unkempt. This moment is a privilege and Tony will take it. You want to hear me out? What I really think about you? About all this? Tony asks. Steve's warmed up. He's primed and open and curious to see where it goes. He wasn't earlier in the evening when he no doubt expected Tony to throw himself at him outright. Though Tony still is, but only like in slow motion. Now Steve nods. Okay, he says. You remind me to keep trying to be my best self, Tony says. I mean, I already know what I have to do to protect the world, but you... Every day, you remind me that I gotta be better for the small things, too. I think that's why I didn't like you at first, because you're just living evidence of how far I have to go. Tony, Steve sighs. That's not a bad thing. Come on. Where was I? Right, okay. So there's that, but I also want to know you. You're nice, sure, but you're funny. You're smart in ways that don't occur to me. And you can be so mean, Tony laughs. And Steve acknowledges the comment with a small smirk. There's like so much going on with you, and I want to be part of that. I mean, sure, there's so many ways this can go wrong. Steve starts at that, but he's still listening. And damn, is getting Steve's unfettered attention a rush or what? The stakes we deal with are high, and we need to work together because we're just better together. as a team, yeah?
I agree, yes.
So I thought to myself, could we be better as another kind of team? Tony switches on a little, just a little, just a tease, by leaning forward and letting his mouth pull into a flirtatious smile. I want to know you so badly. And since you've already seen some of the worst parts of me, I thought maybe you wouldn't mind knowing me back the same way.
There. Gauntlet down.
Steve is, as usual, difficult to parse, but he doesn't seem appalled or scared. Thoughtful, maybe. Measuring. Tony holds his breath. See, the trick is... No, that's wrong. There can be no tricks with Steve. Not a trick, but a strategy. Yes, Tony's strategy with Steve relies on the very reason that he can't fall back on the old repertoire of seduction and charm, and that reason is that Steve would see right through every single move he can make. So Tony can't schmooze, can't seduce, can't throw ludicrous gifts at Steve to make up for Tony's emotional shortcomings. But he can be upfront with who he is and what he wants, and he's pretty sure that Steve would appreciate that better than anything else. Steve picks up on things faster than people expect, and among those things is Tony's tendency to obfuscate and distract, though in respect of their growing friendship, he only calls Tony out on those idiosyncrasies sometimes, instead of always. That Tony would offer to push all that bluster away and let Steve in, as an exchange for being allowed to know Steve in return, that has to be intriguing, at least. And life's short, Tony adds. I got too much else to worry about, so I don't have the energy to, like, suffer my attraction to you in noble silence or whatever. That does get a laugh out of Steve, and it takes all of Tony's willpower to not pump his fist in the air. More importantly, I trust you. Tony takes a breath. I'm pretty certain that if nothing comes from this, we can just keep going. You won't hold it against me, and we can still be Avengers and do what's right for everyone else, because we both know that that's more important than either of us.
I don't know if it'd be as neat as you say, Steve says slowly.
Well, I'll probably be really embarrassed, but better to take the shot and be sure, you know? Better than wondering about it forever.
Still takes guts.
Steve raises his cup of coffee, which Tony belatedly realizes is an invitation to a toast. Tony returns the gesture, and their mugs clink softly. Good for you, Tony. Tony waves a hand in a flourishing half-bow. I try. He coughs. So. Since you're not bailing on me, can I just tell you how good you look tonight?
Steve blinks. Sure.
That shirt is boring as hell, but you make it look like a dream. How do you do it? Is it because you always dress for comfort, so it adds to the whole vibe that you always look like the ideal version of yourself? Also, I love your eyes. It's really hard to get a read on your face most of the time, but your eyes are just wow. So much going on there, even if I don't always know what it is. Do you want dessert? I want something sweet.
Steve looks at the menu. Yeah, okay.
You can let me know if it's too much, Tony says. Me being me, that is.
No, you've been really...
Steve moves his hand right across the invisible border that Tony drew in his head and puts it on top of Tony's wrist. A quick squeeze, nothing at all salacious, and very much a passably platonic gesture. Even so, Tony takes it for what it is, an acceptance of the date, and does his best not to vibrate out of his skin.
This was nice. Honest, Tony.
Tony swallows. That's good. Dessert, yeah?
Of course. What would you recommend?
Out loud, Tony starts describing the various desserts, but in his head, he releases an exhale. That hurdle was a decent-sized one, and they passed it. Steve hasn't shut down the night, so for all intents and purposes, Tony is winning. He's actually winning. Holy shit. He can totally pull this off, as long as he focuses on each step, one after another, without tripping all over himself. Dessert. more talk, some of it small, some of it slightly heavier. Tony learns some things about Steve that he never knew before, such as how Steve visits old folk homes just to talk to people and share some tidbits of his own. Later, Steve lets Tony pay without complaint, and they take an extra long route back to the city. Jarvis takes over most of the driving so they can have a friendly argument over Tony's choices of music, which evolves into a discussion into their choices of vehicles and the number of motorbikes that Steve's destroyed since arriving in the 21st century. They reach the tower. Tony's planned this part too, and once they step out of the elevator into the common area, he turns to Steve and says, "So, hey, I had a good time." "Me too," Steve says, sounding heartfelt and pleased. "It was very nice. I'm looking forward to the next one." Tony perks up. "Yeah? Really?" Steve insists. The asshole probably doesn't know how delectable he looks. The guy knows he's handsome, sure, but he can't have any clue how warm and kissable he is on top of that, how irresistible he is. Yet resist Tony must, and so he limits himself to a hand clasp, his palms settling warm and gentle around Steve's wrist in a mirror of the way Steve squeezed his hand earlier tonight. But while Steve's touch was friendly, Tony lets his touch linger on, suggestive and teasing. Steve does not pull away. "That's great." Tony lets go and gives a little wave. "Night then. I'm turning in." "Are you actually?" Steve raises an eyebrow. "I don't know, maybe," Tony laughs. "Might tinker for a bit, then turn in. Good night anyway."
"You too."
Tony may not have a photographic memory, but he tries his damned best to keep that image of Steve smiling at him locked in his brain, snapped and memorized in all its spectacular detail, in the hopes that it'll haunt his dreams tonight. Look at him. He did good. He got Steve to enjoy himself. He didn't say anything stupid or fuck up in any major way. "I'm great at this," Tony yells as he leaps into bed, clothes still on and all. "Jarvis, make a note. I'm a genius for asking Steve out."
"Noted that you're a genius, sir."
Tony kicks his feet in the air, sending his shoes flying. "Yes, I am. I rock so hard. Wow." Chapter 2. Tony gets to be a little smug. Who can blame him? He walks on air for the next couple of days and takes Natasha's amused side eyes and Bruce's friendly back pats in good spirits. He and Steve still live under the same roof and see each other nearly every day, but there's no whiff of awkwardness to be felt anywhere. They were friends, and now they're friends who have been on one non-disastrous date together, with hopefully another two to follow. Tony gives them a week and a half to simmer. A week and a half for Steve to process what he's comfortable with, which is also a week and a half for Tony to prepare for date number two. He was already leaning this way beforehand, but Steve's response to date number one confirms that date number two gets to be a little fancy. Little fancy instead of big fancy. Tony tells Steve about it, of course, so he knows what to expect.
"Sure," Steve says. "I have a dinner jacket."
"Tie? Bow tie?" "Tie, only if you want to. Bow tie, please no. You okay with being seen in public? With me, that is." Steve is amused by the question.
"I did say yes to going out with you. I do know what that means."
"Just checking. Anyway, dinner and a show, and we can skedaddle early if it's not your thing. Sound good?" The answer is yes, and a couple of days later, Tony comes down from his room to find Steve waiting for him, looking like a dream come true.
"God damn, Steve," Tony whistles. "Aren't you a sight?"
Steve doesn't blush, but he takes the praise with a faint chuckle and plucks at the lapels of his midnight blue jacket.
"Sure, okay."
"I told him to go with a tie," Natasha calls out from the TV area. The other Avengers have all gathered there together, and Tony honestly doesn't care if it's a coincidence or a conspiracy.
"Nah, he doesn't need the tie," Clint says. "Looks better this way."
"I suppose he could use a little color," Bruce comments. What for? Natasha scoffs. Tony's already looking.
Ah, all this petty bickering that misses the point, Thor says ruefully. Have fun, my friends.
This way, Cap.
Tony heads for the elevator before the peanut gallery gets bawdier. Once the doors close, he says, No, seriously, this is some fine work. Where'd you get this done? When did you get this done?
I'm allowed some secrets for now, Steve says.
A shocked thrill shudders up Tony's spine.
That's almost a flirtation, isn't it?
A tentative one, sure. But that sure sounds like Steve's playing along.
Tony leans against the elevator wall for support, damn his excitable heart. He takes a breath.
Fair enough.
Tony's allowed to look more now, too, right?
And dial up the charm?
Shoulders for days, what a treat. Your waist should be illegal.
He thinks he got the tone right, airy instead of leering, but Steve's mouth flattens a little, so subtly that if he weren't studying Steve so closely, he wouldn't have noticed at all.
Oh, too far?
No, it's just,
Steve seems to steel himself.
Do you like it when people comment on your appearance?
Yeah, but I'm a peacock. That's just how my ego works.
Tony waves it off.
Don't worry, it's noted and filed. I appreciate that you bothered at all, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was slightly awkward.
But Tony's recovery was fine. Steve seems a little self-conscious, though, so it's time to quickly rifle through the 24 backup discussion topics that Tony's been mentally cataloging.
I almost got held back earlier, Tony says. Had so much data to download from the suit after that run-in with those energy transporters. What do you think that was really about?
I don't know, but I have a bad feeling about it.
Steve's face clouds over with concern.
Nothing specific, but they were too organized.
Did you think so?
We put them down easily, but those kinds of groups usually panic and scatter, and these people didn't.
What do you mean? Did you see something specific?
Tony asks. And off Steve goes into detail.
Score, Tony thinks with satisfaction.
Work is always a good icebreaker with Steve, and informal mission debriefs always, always get Steve going.
The guy tends to politely self-censor in formal settings, especially when fury is present, but boy, oh boy, does he have a lot of feelings brewing beneath the surface.
Tony lets Steve talk out those feelings all the way to the restaurant. Talking about one mission leads into talking about other missions, other tasks, other people that they've worked with, and other people that they've apprehended. It seems that Steve has been holding on to a lot of snark in his determination to be a good leader, and Tony is delighted to offer his honestly eager ear where it's welcome. See, Tony could be attentive. He doesn't even have to fake it.
It's not that I don't trust them to have our backs. It's just...
Steve looks around as though just now realizing that they're having a nice dinner at a nice table in a fancy but not too fancy place that Natasha helped Tony pick from a list of possible locations. Maybe this isn't the place for it.
You worried about privacy?
Tony looks around, but their section seems safe enough.
Steve winces.
No, but this is supposed to be a date, and instead I'm just going on and on.
Is that a rule?
Tony shrugs. Even if there are rules, what we're doing takes up most of our time anyway.
Heck, it's an actual thing you and I have in common, so why can't that be a date discussion topic?
So have at it, Steve.
Steve almost takes Tony up on it, but then he switches gears, which leads to a whole production in shifting his body language, hands flat on the table, shoulders straightening up, expression clearing. One topic closed and set aside. There's a new topic on the agenda now.
No, Steve says. I want to talk about something else.
Okay.
Just as with their first dinner date, Tony has mentally drawn a border across the table, but he can also be more relaxed with his body language. He leans forward now with unashamed eagerness and sets his eyes, large and intrigued, as he looks at Steve.
People have swooned over Les.
Got something in mind? Anything you want to ask me?
Actually, yes, that's...
You can stop me if it's not... Sure, yeah. I gotta know what it is first, though.
Earlier, I asked if you like it when people comment on your appearance. Your answer, was that true?
What did I say? I said yes, right? Because that's a no-brainer.
Why would Steve bring it up again?
I think most people like being praised one way or another.
Yes, and that's not a negative thing in itself.
But you wanted to ask me because...
Tony considers the things he's figuring out about Steve.
Because you don't, is that it?
Not in a bad way, Steve says quickly.
It doesn't mean anything to you, Tony says slowly. The way you look, it's nothing.
Not part of you.
Not part of the mental landscape that is how you perceive your personhood?
Something like that, maybe.
Is that strange?
Hell if I know.
Okay, so is this a roundabout way to tell me that you want me to stop ogling you? I mean, I thought that I wasn't being obvious about it, but maybe I've been,
no, that's not what I'm getting at.
I was just thinking about how you seem so comfortable in your own skin.
Steve laughs awkwardly.
And I'm not like that at all.
It feels like the only time I'm not uncomfortable is when I'm in a fight. Pick up the shield, and it's only then that everything finally works the way it's supposed to, as if that's all I'm for.
How messed up is that?
How can someone like that even think about having a relationship with another person?
I think about the end of the world all the time, Tony blurts out.
Steve starts a little, but he raises his eyes from where he's been boring a hole into the tablecloth. The scowl eases up, and he inclines his head, listening.
The end of everything, Tony says. The death of everything and everyone. Sometimes that tightening vice of a countdown is the only thing that keeps me going day after day after day, back to a grind that seems to never end.
How messed up is that?
How can someone like that even think they have space for a relationship?
Steve swallows. He seems trapped by Tony's gaze.
Tony's heartbeat thunders in his ears. And it occurs that he may have overshared ahead of schedule, and on top of that made Steve's admission all about himself. But there must be something right about his moment of weakness, because relief and recognition softens Steve's face. There are shades of self-effacing bashfulness in the way he smiles, but it's the layer of wry acceptance on top that makes Tony's heart clench. Sharing is fucking difficult, isn't it?
So we're a pair, then. Steve says quietly.
You understand what it takes to make the tough call.
Discomfort pulls at Tony's stomach, but he makes himself continue.
You know what it means to weigh your life against everyone else's. We don't always come to the same conclusion, but I think I could, I don't know, I could help you share that burden a little.
You can tell me anything. I want to listen.
Anything, huh?
I suppose there'd be limits.
I don't know. But whatever you want, yeah.
Tony wheezes and exhales. Okay, that took a turn.
Yeah, Steve says ruefully. Maybe we should look at dessert.
It would be a hell of a lot easier if I could just wax poetic about your butt.
Tony winces. Sorry, I keep doing that.
I don't mind.
No, really, like I said, this body is just
where I live. You can comment about it all you like.
What's the point if you get nothing out of it?
Tony checks his watch.
Okay, we may have to skip dessert if we want to make the show, but we can get something on the way?
Sure, yeah.
The show in question is a concert at the Philharmonic, just a few blocks down from where they're having dinner. Tony's vaguely aware that the concert is showcasing a specific composer's work, but that's pretty much the extent of what he knows. Bruce and Natasha insisted that the show is suitable, uncomplicated, and that Steve will enjoy it. Tony's pretty sure that they won't betray him about that. Once they arrive at the center, they blend in easily and no one pays them any mind. People are dressed up, but not at full gala levels, so Steve visibly relaxes and takes time to browse the various posters and displays while Tony shadows him.
You should get a brochure, Tony says. Let me crib off you.
Right, because we're on a budget, Steve says wryly.
But he does buy a brochure, singular, and lets Tony lean over to read while Steve flips through the pages. Do note that Tony just leans a little bit. He doesn't do anything so gauche as to press his body against Steve's. Their arms brush, and Tony gets a hint of Steve's body heat. But Tony angles his face away from Steve's to study the printed pages, which keeps it nice and casual. It's good. Steve doesn't go stiff at the proximity. In fact, he only registers it with a glance and then asks if Tony knows anyone in the orchestra. He doesn't. And how often he goes to these kinds of shows? Not often, though more when he was younger. When it's time to go into the hall itself, Tony puts a hand on Steve's back to guide him, and the motion of bodies has them pressing into each other's personal space. Once they're inside and seated, there's little chance for conversation, but that's also part of the game plan. I thought you'd get a box or something, Steve murmurs. For the sake of privacy, he has to lean towards Tony to whisper, and his breath is warm and fleeting against Tony's cheek. Tony shivers. Thought about the balcony, Tony admits, but here's pretty good, right? Yeah, I prefer it down here, I think. Steve smiles at him, then goes back to reading the brochure, as if he hasn't just made Tony's stomach go loop-de-loop. Tony's going to get a good score for tonight's date. Not a perfect score, because he did trip a little a few times, but he's pretty sure he's still in the upper range of incredible. He is, isn't he? Because right now he's proving to Steve that he can show interest in what Steve is interested in, even if Tony may not be into said interest himself. He can make the effort. He can sit through a show, even if he's not paying attention and his brain is speeding elsewhere at a million miles an hour. Anyway, even if he's not getting much out of the concert itself beyond vague thoughts on harmonics and acoustic resonance, he is getting the pleasure of sitting next to Steve, their knees almost brushing and their arms definitely brushing. He gets to be conscious of every rise and fall of Steve's chest, every thoughtful touch to his chin, every appreciative nod he makes at rises and turns in the music. Tony's hungry for all of these details, starving. Before their first date, Tony never hung out with Steve all to himself. Before tonight, Tony's never had the privilege of sitting quietly with him, prodding only lightly at Steve's sometimes formidable bubble of personal space. Steve's letting him do all of this. Steve likes him. Tony wants to gorge on this knowledge forever. During the intermission, Steve bumps his shoulder against Tony's and says, "Are you actually enjoying this?" "Hmm? Oh, you mentioned that you wanted to go to a concert, don't you remember? You said it was on your list, but you never got around to doing it." When Steve shoots him a confused look, Tony adds, "It was an offhand thing. A couple of weeks ago. Remember we chased Hydra through that swamp and their cannons made that sound like drums? Clint made a joke. I probably made a joke, and you mentioned that that wasn't the kind of orchestra you were interested in." "That does sound like something that happened, but that doesn't answer my question." "If I'm enjoying this? Of course I am." Tony grins, "in my own way." "Ah." Steve doesn't press any further and turns back to the brochure. Okay, that was kind of weird. Steve wasn't unhappy with that answer, but it didn't charm him either. Tony thinks quickly. "I used to come to these things with my mom. She loved it, and Howard was busy a lot, so I'd keep her company." Steve turns, his eyes lit up. "Oh? Bingo. I didn't pick up much, as you can tell, but I loved coming with her. She really got into the music, so it was nice to be there for that." "Good memories, then." "Yeah. How about you? You seem to be enjoying yourself." "Yes, this is pretty neat." Steve grins then, a slightly sheepish flash of teeth that has Tony's breath catching. "Not like listening to a record, that's for sure. And all the musicians, how much they're putting into the performance. I guess it's embarrassing to admit, but it didn't occur to me that that'd be part of the experience, too. It's really something." "That's great. Tony's a champion. He's killing it. Maybe we can check out the season tickets after." "Oh, sure, we can do that." The conductor strolls back on stage, ending the tete-a-tete. Tony forces himself to turn back to the stage and at least attempt to pay attention. "All right, Okay. There's been tiny hiccups tonight, but Tony can't let those get to him. He hasn't made any huge mistakes, and although Steve's retreated a little, Tony can't give in to his tendency to panic and overcompensate. He has to stick to the game plan. Be charming, but not pushy. Offer easy conversation. Stay attentive. And follow Steve's lead. The first date went well because Tony defied Steve's expectations, so of course it'd get the strongest response out of Steve. Tonight is about easing Steve into the idea of Tony as a medium/long-term romantic companion, so it's only reasonable that Tony's not getting as much feedback from Steve this time. Steve's being more introspective and analytical, that's all. Long-term romantic companion, though. Fuck. Is that what Tony's aiming to be? It is. He's been thinking of nothing else since Steve said yes. No. Actually, that's not right. He's been thinking about how to win Steve over via the opportunity of 3 dates. That's what's been occupying his brain power ever since Steve said yes. A short-term goal to ease the knots that appear in Tony's stomach whenever he remembers that Steve exists. He wants Steve to want him back, at least a teensy bit. Hell, Tony gave that whole pitch to Steve that other night in the diner. He'd rehearsed the main points beforehand so he'd have those ready, but not too ready in case he'd come off insincere. He made himself say all of that out loud to an actual object of his affections about how much he wanted to get to know him. Rhodey would say that Tony wasn't capable of such a thing, but he is, and he did it. They can be better together because of the unusual lives they have and not in spite of it. They can be good for each other. Right? Uh-oh. Here come the doubts. Tony scrunches his eyes shut in an attempt to tune those thoughts out. He got Steve to say yes. He can't afford to second-guess himself, as though barreling headfirst into an action plan to make Steve like him is meant to distract himself from asking the real question, which is, would Tony even be worth it for Steve in the long run? Nope. Not gonna think about it. He's going to sit here and enjoy sitting next to Steve while a world-class orchestra shows off their skills. It's fine. Tony's doing great, and he will do even better later. Steve likes him and is open to the idea of liking him even more. And once Tony hits that touchdown, Steve will help him figure out how the hell they're going to pull this off. Then Tony won't have to scramble alone in his own head anymore. Yes, he'll hold on to that. Tony might be sweating slightly, or a lot, but he does make it through the night and snaps out of it when people around them start applauding. Tony joins them and then rises into the standing ovation with everyone else. That was amazing, Steve's saying. Thanks for bringing me, Tony. Oh yeah, he's got this. No problem, Tony says. They head back to the tower. Along the way, Steve tells Tony about the few times he got to watch the big bands back in the day. Only once before he got the serum, thanks to Bucky, but touring with the USO gave him more opportunities. I wasn't in the right mindset to appreciate it, though, Steve says, just as they're stepping out of the elevator. The common area is dark, save for the still-lit corridors, so everyone must have gone to bed already, which is a shame. There are still big bands now, though. I could find a show nearby? Oh, Steve startles. Maybe. Not yet. I appreciate it, but sure, of course, yeah. Tony's so busy regretting the fact that Steve stepped away from him that it takes a second to realize the reason for Steve's hesitation. Steve associates big bands with the life that he never got to live out and probably still misses fiercely. Shit. Fuck no, Tony can fix this. He can do it, and he can do it without resorting to an inappropriate joke. He just needs to... Well, good night, Steve says. I had a good time, thank you. No, Steve, thank you, Tony says quickly. He touches Steve again, this time daring to go higher, with his hand resting above Steve's bicep and near his shoulder, a friendly squeeze that lingers, And this time Tony lets himself drift in closer as he does it, so to show off his smile and gaze right up into Steve's eyes. Tony appreciates Steve and likes him so, so much. And right now, he's letting Steve see it clear as day. I'll let you know about number three. You know where to find me, Steve says. Tony laughs a little too loudly, and as soon as he turns his back on Steve, cringes in agony. That was not as smooth a cap off as it should have been. And why the fuck did Tony have to trigger the guy? Jesus. Steve may have had a good time overall, and most of Tony's objectives got fulfilled, but it's always the last 5 minutes that stay with people the longest once it's over. Never mind. That's done. And Tony can't change anything. Better to face forward to date number three, which is going to be spectacular. Chapter 3. When Tony says date 3 will be spectacular, he isn't referring to the location nor to the activities, because those details are incidental. It's Tony who's going to be spectacular. This is also part of the game plan. He had to get Steve emotionally and intellectually first by laying the groundwork to show that he's serious about a relationship, that he can be good company for Steve, and that he's truly thought about what a potential relationship between them can be. This isn't a spontaneous fancy for Tony. Now, Tony's going to gently suggest how much he can rock Steve's world, carnally, if Steve gives him a chance. But he's going to be tasteful about it. As before, Tony gives Steve 11 days to simmer. The plan 10 plus an additional day when a mission goes slightly sideways and everyone needs recovery time. On the prearranged day of date number 3, Tony has Jarvis block his afternoon so he can fuss over his appearance even more than usual. See, this one gives some lift, Tony tells the reflection in the full-length mirror of his walk-in. But it can be too aggressive. Bruce said that he has trouble looking me in the eye when I wear this one. Wait. Has Steve already seen me in this? He turns to the mess on the chaise, upon which are something like 24 incredibly flattering pairs of pants, all of which accentuate his ass in slightly different ways. Is there any pair here that Steve hasn't seen me in? Unfortunately, I am not programmed to keep track of that, sir. Maybe I should go for the maroon one. Tony digs through the pile, then sits up in a panic. What time is it? Shit, I need to do my hair. Anyone watching might think that Tony's planning for a sure thing, but there'll be no fucking tonight. Tony's exuberantly optimistic, but he's not an idiot. Steve is not the cheap date Tony is, and Tony is holding fast to his resolution to not scare Steve. No, the goal tonight isn't sex, it's attraction. Tony's going to put himself on a platter, and if he does everything right, he's going to get a smooch, preferably on the mouth, but on the cheek will do, and a promise for more dates, and everyone will be a winner. He does his hair, trims his goatee, dabs cologne, and gets dressed to full specifications. Dark maroon with the scarlet lining will do for tonight. No jacket. Tony tugs his vest into place and checks the pull around his waist. A girdle would be too much, wouldn't it? He looks good in those, but no, he can't be late for this one. He's just a little late, barely though. Does 15 minutes even count? Tony goes down and Steve's in the common area sitting on the arm of the couch where Thor and Bruce are sitting together watching TV. Steve was studying the view but turns and stands at Tony's harried approach. Sorry, yeah, let's go. Tony starts to turn away, then doubles back when he registers Steve's appearance. The getup is unfamiliar and fits appallingly well. A dark shirt with a highlight accent along the collar that accentuates Steve's shoulders. A belt with a shiny buckle that draws the eye nicely to the line of his hips. And an actually well-cut pair of pants that show off his long, long legs. Hello, man of Tony's dreams. As if Steve needed any help in that department. You look good, Tony says, with remarkable self-control, if he does say so himself. Oh, thank you, Steve says. Shall we go? Yeah, come on. Tony waves at Thor and Bruce, who are too busy arguing about whatever's going on in their show to pay them any mind. How are you feeling? Your arm okay now?
Yeah, took the brace off.
Steve glances at said arm while they step into the elevator. Didn't need the brace, really.
Didn't need the brace. Tony rolls his eyes.
I was nice enough not to call you out on it yesterday, but you're usually smarter than that.
Smart enough to keep wearing a brace?
Smart enough to not make a move like that for an uncertain payoff.
Tony brazenly touches Steve's arm, though he takes care to be gentle.
Don't think I wasn't watching how you threw yourself off that bridge. Not even to do something, but to be a distraction.
Worked, didn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Tony says dryly. Good going, making me feel bad about it.
Steve frowns.
You were working as fast as you could. That's not your fault.
Sure.
How about you? You knocked your head, Clint said.
Cho gave me the clear. It's fine.
Fine, sure. Steve peers over at him.
Look at me. Look at me.
Tony tips his head to let Steve drink in his fill, and as a bonus puts his thumbs into his belt to hopefully draw Steve's attention to where his shirt is stretched tight across his chest. But Steve's concern stays focused on Tony's head, which he scans carefully before drawing back with a satisfied nod. Damn it.
That's all right then, Steve says. Where are we going?
Local bar. Nothing fancy.
Tony laughs at Steve's expression.
I promise.
It's clear that Steve's picturing loud music and a raucous clientele, but Tony knows what he's doing.
Their destination for the evening is a bar that's slightly off the beaten track, with kitschy furniture and vintage decor that clash horrendously, yet has something genuinely interesting to look at wherever one turns. Steve's expression of bafflement when they enter is a sight to behold, and Tony takes advantage of the moment to put his hand on the inside of Steve's elbow. And he lets it stay there, right there, against the cotton made warm by Steve's skin. So after they take a few steps in tandem, Tony's practically clinging on to Steve's bent arm.
Family friend owns the place, Tony says.
The walls are lined with B-movie posters, and there are only a handful of customers this early in the evening, including a lady with an oversized hat that is threatening to upend the potted plant next to her. A vanity project, so it tends to be on the quieter side of cozy. You're going to try the steak.
I am.
Steve slides onto the stool Tony's picked out for him and gives a devastating lopsided smile when Tony drumrolls his fingertips on Steve's ridiculous shoulders.
Okay, I am.
Date number one, booth, opposite each other. Date number two, dinner table, at an angle. Tonight, they're side by side, at the end of a long bar, the space between them narrowed down to a handful of inches. The stool also forces Tony to keep his posture particularly straight, and from Steve's vantage point, he must have a spectacular view of the curve of Tony's spine.
I'm starving, Tony declares. Let's get to it.
They order dinner and drinks, and there's plenty to talk about. Tony's choice of location is brilliant because the easy atmosphere, jazz playlist, and intimate lighting has Steve relaxing in no time. All the warm strength that is Steve stays curved next to Tony like, dare he say it, a shield from the outside world. It's as though they've never been awkward acquaintances at all. Steve leads the conversation more often than not. Hopefully he's warmed up to the prospect of Tony's willing ear and goes for it with a sharp observation here, a politely sarcastic anecdote there. Steve's never been the gesticulating kind, so he doesn't move much from his photo-perfect position on the stool. But that makes it easier for Tony to inch closer. Yes, like a goddamn schoolgirl with a crush, so what? He can sway into Steve's space and poke at his arm for emphasis if he wants to.
I have no idea what to get him, Tony admits. Their plates are almost clear, and Steve's even slouching a little by now, which is charming.
Clint's not even going to be around for his birthday, is he?
Oh, Natasha said she wants to do something before that, Steve says. Besides, isn't he the easiest one of us to get presents for? Everyone knows his special interest.
Feels boring, I guess. Only so many types of trick arrows a guy can make.
You've run out of ideas? Steve laughs. You?
All right, smarty pants. What are you getting, Clint?
That would be telling.
Damn it, Steve.
Oh, hey, you've got a little something.
Tony grabs his napkin and dabs it at Steve's chin by the lower right corner of his mouth. It's actually a white lie. Steve is a neat eater. There's no mess there. But Tony is, alas, not the most noble of men. When Tony draws back, he lets his thumb ever so slightly brush the space just under Steve's mouth. The quickest of teases and over in less than a blink of an eye. Steve is startled, but lets it happen.
There you go, Tony says.
Right, thanks.
Steve clears his throat, and Tony turns away with feigned nonchalance, one hand up to signal Joe the bartender for another drink. The motion, of course, allows Tony to glance at the mirror at the back of the bar, which reflects the very picturesque image of two handsome studs sitting together, shoulder to shoulder, and thick as thieves. However, Steve isn't using the opportunity to check Tony out while he's turned away. Instead, Steve's looking at where Tony is looking, i.e., at the bartender.
Oh, the dartboard's free, Tony points,
as though he's just noticed the setup on the other side of the bar. Let's play around.
Would be cheating, though.
Really? Your aim's perfect even on a full stomach?
Tony narrows his eyes. What if I blindfold you?
No, Tony, we're not going to.
Steve sighs when Tony just grins at him. Let's have a look at the darts first.
Getting up from their stools means that Tony gets to stand, and this time he leads the way towards the small game corner. Steve's too polite to make a grab for Tony's ass, of course, but there's no way he can miss the amount of work Tony's put into this. Tony even trips a little and almost spills the drink he's holding, and Steve does grab Tony's arm to steady him, but the touch is merely firm, and he lets go as soon as Tony's got his weight back under him. Time for the big guns, then.
Oh, you need to get the darts from Joe, Tony says. I gotta use the men's room. Be right back.
I'll be here.
Steve takes Tony's drink from him and carefully puts it on one of the coasters on a side table. In the men's room, Tony checks his reflection. He already looks fantastic, but he can still do some tweaking. He opens another button at the top of his shirt and then rolls his sleeves up to his elbows and buttons the garters into place. As a final touch, he runs a hand through his hair, a quick brush for a slight tousle. Yep, perfect. When Tony comes back out, Steve is counting the darts inside a small woven basket. There's a side table flush against the wall, which has their drinks on it. Tony takes position, leaning against said table, with one leg slightly bent so his hip is cocked. He's not shooting for the stars here. He doesn't expect Steve to be overwhelmed with desire and throw Tony onto a table to have his wicked way with him. Steve looks his way, smiles, and looks back at the basket. Full set here, I think. How do you want to do this? Suppressing a sigh, Tony pushes himself away from the table and puts on a challenging grin. I'm on handler duty today, is that it? He rubs his hands together. Let's warm up with the bullseye. Go on, get.
Steve turns for the dartboard and lifts a hand to aim. It's sexy as fuck, the sheer concentration in his face and the way his mouth purses slightly as he considers the target. A jerk of the hand, barely anything at all, and the dart's gone from his fingers, dead center. Jesus.
Not bad, Tony says. How about this?
While Steve watches bemusedly, Tony takes position slightly beside him and puts one hand over the right of Steve's face, blocking his eye.
Go, Tony says, number 11.
Steve takes a dart, hits 11 on the outer ring. Tony scowls and plucks a dart out of the basket. He puts it in Steve's hand, purposefully arranging Steve's fingers in as awkward a grip as he can manage. Tony also lets his fingertips run a circle around Steve's wrist as he does, wishing goosebumps on the man. To cap it off, Tony hides Steve's other eye. Five. Five in a ring, Steve says, and hits exactly that. Well, dang it, Tony drawls. Steve laughs, and Tony makes a face as though he's offended, which he is, actually, but not about the darts. Tony couldn't be more of a slattern tonight if he draped himself across Steve's lap, but Steve isn't distracted at all. Tony walks around Steve, looking up and down, and making a show of trying to find another handicap. Touch me. Tony tries to will at him. Look at me. You can. He can. Surely Steve knows that, right? Steve wouldn't do anything rude or saucy because that isn't his style. But Tony's seen Steve nervous before. He's seen Steve fumble and flustered under someone's attention, admittedly, just that one time, with that really attractive SHIELD agent. So that is something that can happen, right? Unless this is all there is. This is all that he can get. They have a tiny audience by now, with a few patrons idly glancing their way. Tony gives Steve two darts, one in each hand, and orders him to throw both at the same time. Perfect aim for those, too. Fine, Tony says, hoping he sounds cheerful instead of strained. He collects the used darts and drops them back into the basket that he hands back to Steve. Go whole hog, you show off. Steve does just that and puts truth to the idea of beauty in motion. Tony's very much appreciating the show, in which Steve makes trick shot after trick shot that would make Clint roll his eyes, his arm muscle flexing with each throw, and his whole body a perfect artistic demonstration of balance. But Tony can also multitask. So as he applauds Steve's efforts, he mentally rewinds the evening thus far. He tries to analyze Steve's body language, the rises and falls of Steve's voice through each topic, and whether Steve claimed any of Tony's personal space for himself. Has it been an entirely one-sided case of Tony flinging himself in Steve's direction? Is Tony being obtuse, or has Steve actually not given him anything to work with? Not a single appreciative glance or a brush of fingertips, nor a shaky word or breathless gasp. Steve enjoys his company and doesn't find him threatening, which is, of course, very good. But is that it? Does Tony still do nothing for him? This is date number 3. This is the last one that Tony gets. No, he can't give up. The night isn't over yet. Steve finishes his demonstration with a wonderful wide grin that photographers would cream themselves to capture on film. The open, unfettered joy of that smile has Tony feeling drunk. And for a moment, he's tempted to say, as the prize you get, and drop a nice old peck on Steve's cheek. But at the last second, he chickens out, struck by the mental image of Steve shocked and confused. To recover from the sudden queasiness of that image, Tony grabs his glass and pops the straw into his mouth to chew on it. For your prize, you get to choose a bonus treat from the menu, Tony says. I would like the extra large sundae, Steve replies promptly. For what remains of the evening, Tony does keep trying. He teases Steve over his sundae and gets an ice cream for himself. But as the minutes tick by, he realizes his heart isn't as into it as before. His goals may be unchanged, but he's feeling the crunch now, and that countdown makes him clumsy. Not clumsy enough to actually ruin the night, but his quips get a little more awkward, and the pauses in dialogue drag a little longer before getting filled up. Worse yet, each fumbling attempt makes him more conscious of the next one, and the next one, and the one after that. If Tony were less aware of how high the stakes are, he might give in entirely, but he won't. He's going to hold his head up high, be as winning as Steve deserves, and see this all the way to the finishing line. They return to the tower and fall into what's now a routine of stepping out of the elevator and saying their goodnights. Tony forcibly quashes the churning in his stomach and stands in front of Steve, hoping that he radiates the affection he feels. Steve is amazing.
and Tony is extremely glad that they crossed paths at all, let alone that their lives intersected the way that they have. Tony used to be afraid that Steve would see it on his face and naturally held back out of self-preservation. But right now, in this moment, he doesn't. Let Steve see. Steve does. He inhales a quick rush of breath that sounds almost shocked. Tony. Tony swallows. I hope you had a good time.
I did, very much so. You're so...
Steve drops his gaze to the floor, as though needing to gather himself. Tony's lungs tighten and stay tight when Steve finally looks at him. There's a world unknown in Steve's eyes.
You're wonderful.
It's going to be okay. Steve has never been this comfortable around Tony before. Never looked at Tony with so much warmth before. This is a net gain of the most epic proportions. And Tony will be content with this. Of course, it would be even better if Steve also planted a smooch on Tony's freshly lip-balmed mouth.
I wasn't expecting any of this, Steve says.
Don't take that the wrong way. Our friendship has been important to me. But spending time with you like this has...
He exhales, a little unsteadily.
I didn't know I had it in me to do things like this, to go on dates with someone that's been...
Anyway, yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Tony manages to not turn that statement into a question. What does any of what Steve just said even mean? Then Steve leans in and Tony's eyes go wide.
It's a hug.
Steve's buff arms wrap around Tony and squeeze. It's mostly a good hug, save for how it's a little awkward when Steve pats Tony's back. They've never hugged before, ever, not even after a battle, so it makes sense that it'd still feel a little strange. Then just like that, it's over, and Steve's drawing away with a sheepish turn of the mouth.
You're really something, Steve says.
He's something what?
I try my best.
Tony puts on a grin, but it's likely not his best.
Good night.
Night.
See you soon?
Yeah. Tony doesn't remember walking away. He doesn't remember who walked away first, either. All he knows is that he blinks and is suddenly standing in the middle of his workshop instead of his bedroom, with the lights popping awake around him. He turns to the glass walls, which reflect enough of his own image back at him to confirm that he's a goddamn dish. More than that, he's laid it all out for Steve. He was direct and unequivocal, and only managed to do so by consciously and forcefully choosing enthusiasm over fear. He would not be defeated by thoughts of failure. And yet, at the end of the day, feelings can't be forced. Human beings don't work like that.
Fuck.
Tony's knees go out from under him and he slithers to the ground in an ungainly tumble of limbs.
Sir? Jarvis asked.
It's fine, Jay. I'm just having a lie down, Tony says, his forehead pressed to the floor. Post-mortem helps me think clearly.
Dumb E beeps at him from somewhere to his left.
Would some music go amiss, sir?
Good idea. Put something on.
Chapter 4. Lying on the floor of his workshop, Tony tries to make sense of his new reality. Steve isn't into him. Steve isn't attracted to him. Steve gave him a fair shot. 3 dates, during which Tony went full out, putting his best foot forward, or what he thinks should have been his best foot. But at the end of the day, this open-minded exercise proved the limit of what Steve can give him. No one can say that Tony didn't try. Of course, this was always a possible outcome. Tony knows he can't make Steve want him. But he'd shoved thoughts of failure to the far recesses of his mind because if he gave those thoughts any energy at all, they'd distract him. He couldn't afford that. not if he wanted to make full use of this opportunity to bowl Steve over. Maybe he should have played it differently. Maybe he should have gone softer, or harder, or sneakier. Maybe he should have gotten Natasha's help for every step of the way, instead of just asking for tips. Maybe he should have tried to get more intel on Steve's interests before even bothering to start. Or maybe Tony would have failed no matter what because Steve is really, truly, extremely straight. Or maybe Steve's not that straight, but Tony specifically does nothing for him. Steve's mind could only open so far and Tony couldn't push it to completion, not even after doing everything he could and wringing out all the confidence he could muster for the sake of a man who leaves him breathless by merely existing. It wasn't enough. But Steve enjoyed himself. Tony has no doubts about that. But he probably enjoyed them as typical outings as opposed to dates with Tony. That's probably what Steve meant when he said that he didn't know he had it in him to do things like that. Steve as much as said that he's barely tried dating anyone since he came out of the ice. So maybe the fact that he enjoyed going out with Tony affirmed that he still has interest in that kind of thing. Does that mean that Tony made him realize that Steve's ready to date other people? Fuck, Tony tells the floor. This isn't productive. Think positive. Steve enjoys his company now. They can hang out together and have a fun time. And Tony should be grateful for that, right? When Steve first moved into the tower, some baggage-induced barrier prevented them from clicking anywhere that wasn't on the battlefield, but that's seemingly gone now. Tony breached the unbreachable, and Steve can laugh and play silly games with him. That's great, isn't it? Of course it is. Tony should be goddamn proud of that, and he will be goddamn proud of that. He just needs to adjust his perspective. It probably wouldn't have worked out between them anyway. Tony hadn't allowed himself to think about rejection, but truth be told, he also hadn't allowed himself to think too far into a future where they did get together, and of what he would do if he actually got Steve. Chasing Steve was a goal in itself, but what the fuck does Tony know about going the long haul with someone, let alone someone like Steve? Sure, Tony had pretty words to give Steve on the matter, and those were truthful words, every single one. But an ideal fantasy rarely stands up to the scrutiny of day-to-day challenges, right? Could he and Steve really be true partners with the life they have and the personalities that they are? Probably not. Sir, Jarvis says, maybe you should move. I'm communing with the floor, Tony says. I'm communing so hard right now. Actually, Tony doesn't know what he was thinking asking Steve out like that. What the hell kind of futurist is he to not see this coming? His feelings for Steve surprised him, then annoyed him, then blinded him into thinking that he had a chance. As though Steve saying yes to three dates meant anything at all, besides that Steve was a kind, sweet guy who gave people fair chances. It's Tony's feelings that are getting in the way right now, making it difficult to think clearly and appreciate the wins he's achieved. Obviously, what he needs to do is think even harder and by brute force make himself stop being such a goddamned head case. He needs to be satisfied with what happened so he can send this chapter to rest. So on, Tony's brain goes, rotating through the same points over and over again, as though they'll make more sense after another wash cycle. He's also been wired all day, and now exhausted after putting on his A-game for Steve's sake, so it's only a matter of hours before the day's efforts catch up to him and he passes out. Tony falls asleep with his mind still racing. Tony wakes up with a disgruntled snort and is perplexed by his surroundings. His lower back files a vehement protest and he rolls over with a groan. Good morning, sir, Jarvis says.
Coffee machine,
Tony croaks. Brewing, sir. He's still in yesterday's dinner clothes and didn't brush his teeth. Feeling like a petulant worm, Tony wriggles out of his vest, shirt, and pants without bothering to sit up properly and rolls over to grab a discarded grease-stained tank top from the floor. Fucking Steve. This would be so much easier if he could dislike Steve. If only he could malign Steve's taste or blame Steve for not understanding what Tony was really offering him. But there's no forgetting that Steve was more than generous with him. Tony would never go out with someone he had no interest in the same way. It's funny. Tony didn't realize he was this invested in getting Steve to like him back. Yes, he'd been mooning over the guy for weeks, but he never expected the sting of non-reciprocation to suck this much. Comparatively, yearning from a distance was much more enjoyable. Tony could enjoy knowing Steve and existing in the same space as Steve without being self-conscious about it, because Steve would never have known. At least in yearning, Tony could pretend and tell himself that Steve was a fool for not knowing what he was missing. Geez, how is he going to face the man? Steve will be warm and exceedingly polite and never make Tony feel bad about himself. But Tony has to carry the knowledge of failure from here on out. The dates were great, though. Tony has no complaints there. Steve was as sweet and funny up close as Tony hoped he'd be, and he knows him better now. Steve worries all the time about the state of the world, like Tony does, but compartmentalizes it better. Steve is fiercely loyal and sometimes forgets that not everyone else is the same way. Steve isn't sure who he is outside of Captain America, but he chooses to take that as a glass half full and continue to be the best that he can for the sake of other people. Steve trusted Tony to know all of this and enjoyed being with Tony up close to boot. Tony needs a day off, or maybe the week off. That should be more than enough time to get his bearings back. The workshop lights flash green, an Avengers alert. Of course, Tony sighs and stands up. Here we go. Luckily, there's spare sweatpants also lying around, so Tony gets to wear that instead of suiting up in his underwear. It's going to be one of those days. It's a straightforward rescue. Clint called it in when he saw the explosion on the news, and off they go in the Quinjet to deal with a fire. There's burning, an explosion at some power plant or the other. Tony trusts the rest of the team to know the details and point him in the right direction anyway. Save civilians, isolate the fire, etc. Tony thinks that he does a passable job in that he at least doesn't make anything worse. But of course, as soon as the site is clear and they're readying to leave, the first thing Steve says as soon as he comes aboard the Quinjet is, "Have you eaten today at all?" Steve asks. "Anything that isn't coffee?" Tony hasn't even bothered to lift up his faceplate and show off his unwashed, unshaven face, yet Steve's already coming for him. "Joke's on you, I haven't had coffee yet either." Tony. "What? I just woke up, don't yell at me." "I'm not yelling, I..." Steve takes a breath. "Once we're back at the tower, park the suit and come down to eat. Immediately, or I'll fetch you." Tony considers arguing, then decides it isn't worth it. "Fine. Can I have a shower first?" "Yes, you may shower first." An hour-ish later, Tony realizes that he was wrong and should have argued. Because if he argued, then he wouldn't have to make himself leave the security of his room and subject Steve to his company. But hey, Tony's having all sorts of regrets lately, so why not another one? When Tony finally drags himself down to the common area, his heart stutters a little. Steve's at the stove cooking him breakfast. He's got an apron on, too, with the string tied in a neat little bow at the small of his back, an incongruous detail when paired with the man's sensible cotton shirt. It's as if the guy is determined to find and smash every single one of Tony's secret fantasies. Tony drags himself to the dining table and drops into a chair. "Thought you said you didn't want to inflict your cooking on us." "Can't get eggs wrong." Steve eyeballs the pan. "I think." It's pretty much lunchtime already, but Steve's decided that Tony's having breakfast for lunch. Coffee's already on the table, and Steve slides towards Tony a plate of scrambled eggs, that are only slightly uneven in texture, pancakes made from an instant mix, yet gets instantly elevated by the Asgardian syrup that Thor's deigned to share with them, and apple slices. "Go on, then," Steve says. "If anything's terrible, just shove it aside. Or give it to you since you'll eat anything." Steve flashes a smile. "Or you can do that. There's leftovers in the fridge if you want something else." "This is fine." Tony tries a forkful of eggs, which are too runny, but still better than anything he can make. "Thanks." Steve's made a plate for himself, so they have to eat together. Just the two of them. Tony daren't ask where the rest of the team are. Maybe they heard that Steve was cooking and decided to make themselves scarce. "You okay there?" Steve asks. "Were you working on something important last night?" "You can say that." Tony busies himself with a mouthful of coffee so he won't be made to elaborate. "If you're tired, you don't have to come when someone calls it in. I know we haven't agreed on any rules for that, but a crisis doesn't always require all hands on deck." Steve chews his pancake thoughtfully. "Any ideas on how to communicate that?" "Not right now, but we can probably figure out an alarm scale or something. And I'm not that tired. I helped. I was helpful." "Yes, you were. I'm not saying you weren't needed. I'm just thinking out loud because we're still figuring this out." "Yeah, okay." They eat for a while. Tony wonders if he should turn the TV on for some noise or get Jarvis to put on a newscast or something. "So," Steve pauses ominously, "we should probably talk about us." Tony fumbles with his fork. "Now?" "I thought we should, since that was number three." Tony's not ready. He's not powered up. He's still trying to process the last few weeks and all the choices he made that brought him here. He didn't even want to see Steve today, let alone talk to him about things. Oh, shit. What if Steve brought it up so soon because he's already thinking about seeing other people and wants to clear the air with Tony first? Maybe Tony can solve everyone's problem by crawling into a hole and dying. Steve looks alarmed. "What's wrong?" "Just give me a sec." Tony takes a hefty chug of the immaculately mixed coffee that Steve prepared for him and closes his eyes. He tries to center himself the way he used to do before big presentations got passé in his line of work. He thinks about how important Steve is to him, and how badly he wants to retain as much of that friendship as he can. The three dates may not have gone the way he wanted them to, but he has to get this moment right. He opens his eyes. The sight of Steve staring at him, eyes wide, is enough to make Tony waver a little, but he girds his loins. He can do this. He's fucking Tony Stark. He's given speeches while drunk off his ass and with his head pounding in agony, often at the same time. "Steve," Tony puts a smile on and Steve's eyes widen further. "I just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. You didn't have to give me a chance, but you did, and I'm so grateful for that. You're a good friend, and thank God we laid down the rules up front, right? Nothing has to change. And I know I won't let anything change." "Tony, what are you going on about?" "I'm just saying I'm not going to make anything difficult between us because I promised. And I keep my promises." "Well, I try to keep my promises," Tony laughs. "You know what I mean. So yeah, thank you, Steve. It meant a lot to me." Steve has put all his cutlery down and has that face on as though he's about to head into a mission briefing. "I think I need a little clarification here." "Sure," Tony says gamely. "Because that sounds like, a closing statement." "Did I pull it off okay? I'm still kind of..." Tony gestures at his head. "Food probably needs to get digested more, but I think I got the main points. Did I?" "Tony," Steve says slowly, "I went out with you. 3 times. "Yeah." "I enjoyed myself." "Yeah." "I thought you enjoyed yourself." "I did. It was great." Tony feels his face start to drop into a moony expression and quickly schools it. "No complaints. So grateful. Like I said, thank you." "Then why does that sound like you want to stop?"
What?
You want to stop at 3? Steve says. You don't want to keep going? Confusion has Tony's smile wavering. He must have heard that wrong. Keep going with what? Do you not want to keep going out with me on more dates? Tony looks at his plate, then at his near empty mug. I think I need more fuel in the tank. I keep hearing one thing, and it sounds like this thing, but it's probably some other thing that you're saying, so there's likely to be a skipped connection somewhere between auditory input and processing. Tony, I think you heard right. And just please answer the question. You don't want to keep going out with me?
Steve,
Tony exhales loudly. I know you're not interested in me that way.
What?
I don't tickle your fancy or float your boat or whatever else the kids say these days. You let me wine and dine you and we got our answer. You're not attracted to me, which is, you know, whatever. Because that's totally your loss, Tony says airily. So we can say we gave this a fair shot.
Tony, I told you, Steve says, voice rising a little. I told you how much I enjoyed going out with you.
Yes, I know, I heard you. We can still do that.
What?
We can still do stuff, me and you, hang out, whatever.
Steve frowns.
You mean as friends?
Exactly, now you get it.
Anyway, but I don't want to just hang out as friends. That's the whole point. I thought that you wanted...
You're giving me a headache, Steve.
I'm giving you a headache. You've apparently decided that we've broken up without telling me.
There's nothing to break up, Tony snaps.
Geez, where did that come from? He clears his throat and says with forced calmness,
Steve, I don't know what point you're trying to make with this.
Tony, I like you, Steve exclaims, a lot.
I know, Tony replies in confusion. I was there, I noticed.
Doesn't mean you're attracted to me, though, which is my
loss. Yes, I heard you the first time.
Why does Steve look angry?
I am, though, attracted to you. You're very handsome.
Tony rolls his eyes. You don't need to say that. I'll still hang out with you.
Steve seems to collapse back in his chair.
Oh, geez.
Why are you making such a fuss? Look, your pancakes are ruined. They're soggy now. I did want to finish these, you know.
You can't just... Tony only sees Steve's hand when it's already traveled more than halfway across the table and is mere inches away from touching Tony's fingers. The move is so bizarre, so out of left field, that it has Tony automatically flailing backwards and away. The chair scrapes against the floor underneath him. They freeze in that humiliating tableau. Steve in the motion of reaching for him and Tony in the motion of flinching. They stare at each other, apparently both of them equally shocked and perplexed as to how it's come to this.
Tony says.
Steve doesn't say anything, but returns to his chair as though he never moved at all. There's still food to turn to. Uncaring of decorum, Tony shoves forkfuls of disintegrating pancake and eggs into his mouth and ignores Steve's presence. What is with Steve today? It'll probably make more sense later. After Tony's had a long soak in a bubble bath, he can make a whole afternoon out of it and get a couple of hours sleep in a bed instead of on the floor.
Tony, Steve says, go out on a date with me.
Tony's head snaps up and he stares, appalled. Steve is a funny guy, and he has been known to drop an ill-timed comment once or twice, but he wouldn't make fun of Tony with a joke like that, unless he thinks that'd be a funny way to break the tension. But that would still be stupid and mean. Steve knows how Tony feels. He knows. And Tony doesn't want Steve to be that kind of person.
Man, Tony doesn't have a good handle on anything this morning, except the fork in his hand, probably.
Tony, Steve says, voice as gentle as a caress, and it makes the hairs on Tony's arms stand on end.
Oh, Steve's feeling guilty.
Well, shit. Tony adores the man, truly he does, but he's not in the mood to deal with that right now either. Tony scarfs down the last of the pancakes and chases it with the remains of his coffee. When Tony stands up, Steve stands up too, mirroring him and looking for all the world like he's about to throw the shield at Tony if he dares to make a run for it. The fact that the shield isn't even in the room right now is irrelevant. Tony grabs at his plate and cutlery and skips past Steve to put it in the sink to rinse. Tony feels taut as a bowstring, and he's pretty sure that if Steve comes anywhere near him, he's going to kick him in the face, which would be a hassle to apologize for, so he hopes that Steve doesn't try. Tony. Oh no, Steve's using his Captain America voice now. Please, one date with me. That's all I'm asking for. What, so they can be miserable together? Tony scoffs and wipes his hands on the tea towel. If, Steve inhales deeply, if that's not something you want anymore, I understand. Tony bursts out laughing. He sounds a little hysterical, but that can't be helped. What, is it non sequitur day today? Did I miss a memo? Then go out with me, Steve says patiently. You asked for three, and I gave you three. I'm only asking for one. One, Tony echoes flatly. The glint in Steve's eye promises persistence, and abruptly all of Tony's dismay and confusion gets overtaken by a far more constructive emotion, irritation. Look at Steve, being all stubborn for no good reason. He feels bad that he doesn't return Tony's feelings, and he's decided that he's going to make it Tony's problem too, as if it isn't already Tony's problem in the first place. Heartache sucks enough as it is, and now Tony's got to deal with this brand new nonsense on top of it? Fine. Fine, Tony says. Tonight, Steve says. No! Tony's had more Steve than he can stand for at least 24 hours. I'm washing my hair tonight. Then tomorrow night. Tony sighs. Yeah, whatever. Is that a promise you won't forget? Tomorrow night? Yes, yes, tomorrow. I'll have Jarvis make a note. Tony sighs. It's true that when Steve gets worked up about something, he's going to fuse himself to that cause come hell or high water. It's also true that one of Tony's newest jobs in recent times has been to call Steve out when he's being ridiculous. Steve, you don't have to do this. I don't, Steve agrees, which for some reason makes Tony's stomach lurch unpleasantly. But I want to. He looks Tony over. I think you need a nap. Yeah, probably, so I'm going to get one. Bye. Tony makes himself scarce, does not trip on his way, and does not look back to watch Steve as he goes. Maybe Steve will come to his senses by tomorrow and leave Tony to wallow in peace. Chapter 5. Tony almost forgets about it. It's not that difficult, what with his extensive experience at distracting himself from unwanted thoughts. He certainly has more experience with that than he does with the sincere courtship of mostly straight men. Tony indulges himself in a nap, the promised bubble bath, a work marathon, and then a binge of TV shows that he gets through at 4x speed. After 24 hours, during which he does not see nor hear from Steve at all, Tony is optimistic of his chances of putting the whole episode behind him. There are lessons to be learned and growth to be had, yada, yada, and so forth. But then there's an Avengers meeting with Maria Hill, and Tony is reminded that Steve exists. Steve says hi. Tony says hi right back, and the insidiously boring meeting goes on with the most minimal of interactions between them. Luckily, the meeting's agenda is a pedestrian mix of admin matters, so Tony spends the time mentally checked out and designing the next round of upgrades for the arc reactor. He's still sketching on his phone when the meeting wraps up, and he half hears Bruce saying, "Okay, so do you think we should start putting a log together? I have a contact at the VLA if we want to try that out." "I want to visit this VLA," Thor says. "You can communicate with them," Steve says, "but Tony and I have plans tonight, so we'll have to pick it up tomorrow." "Another date already?" Natasha sounds amused. "All right. Points for enthusiasm," Clint says. "Date," Tony thinks wryly. That's one way to put it. He looks up from his phone to tell Bruce not to bother, only to be caught by Natasha's looking at him with a confused frown. Tony promptly forgets his train of thought and says, "Hey, Steve, let me know what to wear, yeah?"
"Casual," Steve replies.
"See you at 6 as usual."
"Casual, 6. Yep, heard you."
Tony snaps his phone shut and stands up to join everyone else in milling out of the room. "We're done here?" He saunters off, his steps evenly paced, and decides that he's not going to sweat whatever happens later. Of course he's bummed that Steve isn't into him. It's a huge bummer, probably the worst bummer of the year. But one good thing about being bummed is that it saps the energy out from everything else, leaving very little behind for embarrassment. Tony threw himself at Steve. Whatever. Tony can't be angry either because Steve really made the effort. All that's left is exhaustion. Tony's not tired enough to not work. He can always do that. But he's tired enough to not want to think about what it all means. The matter of his feelings, of Steve's feelings, and of whatever it is they're going to do to navigate their friendship from here on out. All those issues are for future contemplation by a future Tony. Tony had worked himself into such a frenzy over the past weeks that he'd had to crash eventually. Eventually is now, which is why it's unfortunate that Steve insisted on a conciliatory date ASAP. But a promise is a promise. So at 6, Tony goes down to the common area where Steve is waiting for him. As usual, Steve is a vision. He's wearing jeans and a dark button-up that, if Tony were in the mood, would have him thinking about divesting Steve's wardrobe with his teeth. Tony sighs and slips on the pair of tinted glasses he'd been carrying, readying himself to face Steve. "Hey," Tony says, "ready to go?"
"Yes, let's."
When Steve stands, there's a glint of keys in his hands. Apparently, they're taking Natasha or Clint's car tonight, since there's no way in hell that Tony's riding Steve's bike with him.
"You look nice," Steve says.
Tony looks at him sharply. That sounded sincere enough, but awkwardness oozes off of Steve like a bad stench, poorly mitigated by the small smile Steve shoots him.
"Great." Steve's trying to return the favor of what he thinks is dating etiquette, as observed by a Tony.
"Thanks," Tony replies, though he doesn't actually know what he's wearing under the jacket he grabbed on the way out. A printed band shirt, probably.
"You too."
A flash of something like irritation passes over Steve's face, but is gone just as quickly. Tony decides that he's not going to be bothered by that. It was Steve who pestered him for this night out, so the guy can roll with it. "Any opinions about the scans?" Steve asks, while the elevator doors close around them. Hill made it sound like a big deal, but I'm not sure what to make of it.
"Might be something, might not," Tony replies.
"So not urgent, then? You've always been so specific about those kinds of, what did you call them?
Power pockets.
We can look into it tomorrow."
"Right."
Steve looks at the keys in his hands and slides them back and forth across his fingers. He's regretting the night already, maybe.
"Thank you for coming. I wasn't sure that you would,
Tony wasn't sure himself either, but he knows what Steve's doing. He's making a point that their friendship doesn't have to change or worse, backtrack. Steve's promising that he won't treat Tony any different, and Tony would be more grateful about it if he had a bit more time to recharge. "Food better be good," is all I'm saying.
"I hope so too," Steve says, so fervently that Tony snorts in amusement.
"It's fine. The drive out is fine. Steve's mood is fine. The conversation is fine." Tony follows Steve's lead of sticking to work topics and the occasional gossip about the rest of the team, and no one says anything about Tony's failed attempts at getting an emotional upgrade with Steve. In a way, it's a relief to put that behind them, too, because the occasional pause in chatter is no longer a call to arms demanding that Tony demolish every pause with something relevant and interesting in order to keep Steve's attention. And because Steve's driving, Tony's allowed to be distracted by the spectacle of streets and buildings ambling by. The night will probably be over before they realize it.
"Okay," Steve says suddenly. "We're going to order soon."
"What?" Tony realizes that Steve's brought them to a drive-thru, and there are a couple of cars down the queue from the speaker. The restaurant beyond is a familiar chain knockoff, and such a surprise to see that Tony immediately sits up. Oh, hey, I know this place. They have great tater tots. Yeah, I want tater tots and a burrito. Have you been here before?
No, but we're not far from where I used to live, Steve says. I saw it a couple of times while visiting the area.
You lived around here?
Tony looks around, suddenly more interested. Man, that must be tough coming back.
Sure, in some ways.
But it's great to see what's still around. Who's still around?
Huh. Tony steals a glance at Steve, who meets his gaze evenly. Steve didn't say that to be melancholy, but as a simple delivery of fact, as if this is the kind of thing they talk about all the time.
So you come back often?
I walk around sometimes, Steve says.
Would you want to do that with me one day?
I'd show you around.
Oh?
Does Tony want to?
Actually, he kind of does. And not because Steve looks great in track pants.
That old hunger to know tickles the back of Tony's brain, and he automatically tries to quieten it. But not too much, because this can't hurt, right?
Steve's offering, after all.
Sure, one day, maybe.
Oh, hey, I want extra large fries, too.
Steve's eyebrows go up. Fries and tater tots.
Shut up. I'm allowed carbs sometimes.
I'm not criticizing. I'm just trying to estimate how hard I'll be working to finish your dinner for you.
Ha, you'll see.
Tony waves imperiously at the speaker.
Order up, get.
Tony expects further commentary from Steve, but he relays Tony's requests without censorship and matches that with an impressive order of his own. In no time, Tony has a lap full of warm paper bags, into which he pushes his grubby fingers.
Hey, no, save that, Steve says, as he leads the car out of the drive-thru and back onto the main road.
Wait until we get there.
We're going to eat in the car anyway, so just let me...
No, Tony. One hand still on the steering wheel, Steve uses the other to smack at Tony's fingers, which is so audacious that Tony gasps and shoves back at him.
Hey,
Tony protests.
You can wait 5 minutes, Steve says. We're almost there.
Almost where? The answer is a nondescript apartment building, which looks pretty much like any other in its neighborhood. After parking, Steve leads Tony into said building and up a rickety elevator all the way onto the roof. It's actually pretty nice out here. There's a couple of clean tables and chairs, plus fairy lights that are already switched on despite the sun still being out. The fact that Steve has the right keys to get here must mean that they're at least not breaking and entering, but Tony's still confused.
Is this like your secret place you go when you get sick of us? Tony asks.
Ha. Steve shakes his head. No. You can rent the space for events. I had no idea that was a thing until recently.
Okay.
Tony says slowly. But why?
Well.
Steve's standing behind Tony, and his fingers settle carefully at the joint of Tony's shoulders. Tony tenses up but quickly realizes what's happening and goes with the motion. At Steve's urging, Tony shuffles sideways and turns on the spot until he sees the other side. It's far from the best view of the NYC skyline, but right there in front of them is the sunset, with a distant Avengers Tower silhouetted strikingly against the hues of orange and red, with the pad perfectly perpendicular and their team name lit up. It's a familiar sight, yet altered for its position, not voyeuristic, not idealistic, but like seeing a beloved friend after years apart and still knowing them in all ways that matter.
Oh, Tony says, I know.
Steve says, it might be a little strange to come out here just to look back at ourselves, but I think it's nice to step outside once in a while and see our home in a new way.
Home.
The word strikes hard and shocking between Tony's ribs. He turns, instantly needing to know what Steve means by that, and is startled to find that Steve is standing right there. Steve is right next to him, and so close that Tony could have smacked his nose against Steve's shoulder if he'd moved too fast.
Tony immediately looks up and is unable to miss the fact that they're close enough to kiss, if one were so inclined, which no one is, obviously.
Obviously?
Tony's throat clicks. He starts to back up, only to inhale sharply when he feels Steve's hand on his back, resting there, as if the space just a few inches above Tony's pelvis was meant for him. Tony's knees lock together and Steve smiles, a little awkward, a little hopeful.
Steve, do you need to wear these?
Steve asks. The malfunctioning of Tony's lungs gets worse when Steve touches the frames of Tony's glasses with his fingertips.
No, Tony says.
With the most careful of tugs, Steve draws Tony's glasses clear from their perch and folds them one-handed. He tucks them into Tony's jacket pocket and then, apparently ignoring Tony's visible freakout, brushes a thumb at the space by Tony's eye, in a devastatingly gentle stroke up to his eyebrow and back down.
I like being able to see your eyes, Steve says, voice low but his smile sheepish. You're very expressive when you want to be. I envy that so much.
Envy, Tony echoes disbelievingly, because I wish I was like that. Then maybe you'd... Steve's mouth draws into a hard line and he takes Tony's hand into his. He then guides Tony's hand up, finger splayed to reveal his palm, and presses it against Steve's chest. Steve's heart is going double time, a frenetic drum behind his ribs. Tony stares at his hand uncomprehendingly, then turns up to Steve's face in all its calm, placid handsomeness.
Were you, Steve licks his lips. Were you this anxious when you set up our dates?
More, probably, Tony says weakly. It's a fine line between being on your best behavior and pretending to be someone you're not.
Yeah. Steve bobs his head. I don't know how to do this.
I mentioned that already, but I really don't know how to do this, Tony, and I wish I did because then you'd be treated the way you deserve.
Hey, stop that, Tony says automatically. Even in daily life, I get things just slightly wrong.
I know I've gotten a lot better at it, but
no, shut up. I really like you a lot.
It's a declaration, but one that Steve delivers with a worried tremor threaded through the words. He watches Tony closely, as though needing to memorize whatever reaction Tony has next.
Do you believe me yet?
But,
God.
Steve standing so close is really fucking distracting. Tony tries to think.
But you just, as friends, it's not like,
I'm slow, yes. But I'd really appreciate it if you could give me a pass on that.
I honestly never thought of you that way before, and it takes time for me to get used to it, Steve says carefully.
Through the first date, the only thing I could think about was how I had to make sure not to hurt your feelings. Because you mattered to me and I was obviously never going to return your...
He sighs.
But it was wonderful.
And the more time I spent with you, the more I forgot what was at stake.
I just enjoyed how comfortable it was to be with you. It felt so natural.
Is this what it's supposed to feel like?
I couldn't tell.
Right. Exactly.
Tony says hoarsely. So maybe it's just...
But I know now, Steve says. I know.
I knew it when I realized during the third date that that would be the end of it unless I made a choice.
You might think that. Steve may say that, but Tony was sure too. This morning, last night, and the night before that.
He can't have been wrong, could he?
But you don't, really.
Why do you say that? Steve asks, curious instead of angry.
Well, you didn't really look at me.
There is a physical component to this.
Yes, I do.
I did.
I mean, at me.
You don't check me out and think dirty thoughts.
Dirty thoughts might take some practice, Steve says wryly. But of course I've been checking you out.
No, you haven't.
I'm not great at espionage, but
I really fucking prettied myself up for you for date number 3, but you didn't look at me any different.
Steve nods. So you think I'd only be observing at your assets when you're dolled up and not the rest of the time?
Tony blinks. What?
We do live in the same building, Tony. I have been looking.
I would notice, Tony ventures. Wouldn't I?
You have a mole here.
Steve brushes a fingertip under Tony's ear, making Tony gasp. Your gray sweatpants have a loose thread at the knee.
You've rotated through 2 different tank tops since I've started keeping track, but I bet you have many, many more.
He clears the throat. I like the one that the tag at your waist, the one that's been burned off.
Oh, shit.
You've been looking, Tony wheezes.
Yes, I have, Steve says patiently.
No.
Tony tilts away and out of Steve's grasp. He looks at the sunset, almost gone now, which allows the fairy lights to do their thing, then at the bags of food, the setting, then back at goddamn Steve, who's standing there waiting, as if the next move is entirely Tony's.
Fuck. He's being wooed. By Steve, what the hell?
Tony, calm down.
Steve says, I'm not prepped.
Tony looks down at himself.
I'm not ready. I didn't. Oh, crap. I was a dick to you.
Tony. Steve's back into Tony's space and takes hold of both of Tony's wrists. Just a hold, gentle and grounding, which is suitable because Tony feels like he's about to vibrate himself into oblivion again.
You're thinking too hard. Look, I just need to recalibrate.
Tony, you won. You have my attention. I'm here.
Steve shakes Tony's wrists a little as though trying to wake him up.
Hi.
Hi.
Tony takes a deep breath and releases it slowly.
I do remember how to be smooth.
It's just dinner, Tony. Steve grins.
Though it does Tony a second to remember that he's throwing his words back at him, that's all.
And your tater tots are going to get cold.
Okay, that is bad because you haven't tried them yet.
Tony's still a little dazed, but he does let Steve drag him over to the table where they unpack their bags and load the ready plates.
Fuck, you took me on a date, he says wonderingly.
I did say that, Steve says.
You did? Wow, okay. What was I thinking? Of course I'd convince you. I'm very smart.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Tony cracks up and Steve with him.
Geez, okay, so they're really doing this?
Tony got it right, but also got it a little wrong because for all that he told himself that he shouldn't assume things about Steve, he'd done it anyway.
They do have a great deal in common, but they're still very different people.
Tony knows this. It's the whole reason they butted heads in the first place.
And that's relevant here too, in matters of the heart. A little hiccup, but not a deal breaker at all.
This is who I am, Tony, Steve says. I know what I feel, but I might never be as demonstrative as you are. If that's disappointing for you, we'd best get that out of the way now.
No, that's the point of this too, Tony says,
now bold enough to grasp Steve's forearm.
Steve returns it too and rests his hand on top of Tony's, his touch as warm as the pleasure accruing in Tony's chest.
I told you that I wanted to get to know you. And this is part of that, too. I gotta understand how you show your
feelings.
All that.
Steve is nonplussed.
This was your idea. Why are you being coy about it now?
I didn't think that far, Tony exclaims. I wanted you to help me figure this out.
Oh. That didn't sound very convincing coming out of Tony's mouth, but Steve grins, intrigued.
That sounds doable.
Yeah, so it's like now I know something new. I have to tell you what I need.
And you need to believe me when I return the favor.
Vice versa and so on.
Tony looks at his fries. Thank God I ordered the extra large fries. I'm starving. My God, I need energy to deal with you.
Deal with me?
That's very nice.
You know what I'm talking about.
I want to be firing on all cylinders so I can appreciate everything. You and everything.
Tony shoves half a dozen fries into his mouth at once and stares while Steve hands him a napkin.
Fuck, we're dating now.
Yes, Tony, Steve says.
The rest of the night is significantly better. Sheer relief buoys both of them forward. They chat, they laugh, they try each other's dinner orders, and they watch the city at night from a vantage point vastly different from what they usually have at the tower. What a turnaround from 2 days ago.
Hell, it's a turnaround from the first 3 dates.
Because it's Tony's turn to slowly relax in Steve's company and accept it for what it is. By the time they return to the tower, there's still plenty to talk about. And this time, Tony's contentedly clinging to Steve's arm as they step out of the elevator and back into familiar territory.
I want to take you out of the country, Tony says. Nothing fancy, just like for sightseeing. Is there anywhere you want to go?
I'll have to think about it. But is there anywhere you want to go?
Nah, just want to go with you, really.
Steve grins at him. You keep that up, you're going to get sick of me.
Hope not, but that might actually do me some good because I cannot afford to be this.
He gestures at himself in reference to the giddy high that Steve inflicts upon him.
All the time. Exhausting.
We should work on that, yes.
Anyway. Steve stops walking and Tony realizes that they've arrived at the little crossroads between the TV area and the corridors that lead down to the various living quarters.
You wanted a kiss, didn't you, the other night?
Tony hums.
Don't need one now, though.
But you'd still like one.
Wouldn't turn it down. I mean, you don't have to, since this is still new for you.
Tony trails off at the look Steve gives him.
Okay, yes, I'd like that.
You know, it did not occur to me at all at the time.
Steve shifts around so that they're standing in front of each other. And it's as matter of fact as when Steve arranges them to spar. It still manages to be spine-tinglingly romantic somehow.
Did not occur to me that you needed physical contact. You might have to remind me once in a while.
Buddy, that will not be a problem now that I have permission.
Tony's breath catches when Steve cups Tony's chin.
FYI, if this is terrible, don't worry about it. We can work on that too.
It's not terrible.
Tony's eyes fall shut when Steve leans in, and the first brush of lips is,
okay, it's fine. Not electric or anything like that, but a straightforward, simple texture of lips against lips. And anyway, Tony's more excited about these being Steve's lips than the actual kiss itself.
But then Steve makes a sound, a sigh, almost wistful, and presses in as firm and sure as his declarations that he likes Tony. And will Tony please believe him now? The lack of hesitation makes Tony's eyes fly open in shock, and then they're closing again as he takes the kiss and is swept up in the soft, sweet sensations that crest over him. That's Steve's mouth moving against his, and,
hey, no, this was Tony's idea, thank you very much.
Tony remembers himself and kisses back, open-mouthed and bold, and chasing Steve so strongly that he needs to rise up to his toes to get there. Steve makes a surprised noise and then a husky gasp when Tony shows him what's what. Each pressing kiss eases the ache in Tony's chest, tipping it out measure by measure to make space for the joy that comes flooding in to take its place. Steve's hands flutter awkwardly at Tony's sides, so Tony helps there, too. He grabs those hands and guides them to his waist. That's all Steve needs before he's touching him. Broad palms sliding greedily up Tony's back. Tony understands the impulse and has his arms around Steve's shoulders, hauling him closer so to narrow the space between their bodies to nothing. There's just them in this greedy little dance, breathing against each other's mouths and their shoes squeaking against the floor as they grab at each other. Tony pulls away first. Not because he's the stronger man or anything like that, but because he wants to see Steve's face, his mouth kiss-swollen and eyes dazed when they blink open. Perfect. Wonderful. Amazing.
Tony pats Steve's chest to show his appreciation. Whoa, okay.
Tony smacks his lips. Nice.
Steve smiles. You sure?
Yeah, it's good.
Tony clears his throat and detangles himself from Steve.
So that's, thank you for the nice night out. I had a good time.
Me too.
Good, that's good. Great. So, good night, yeah? Onward to number 5, and so on.
Tony spins on his heel, ready to skip all the way back to his room.
Tony?
Tony turns back.
Yeah?
Do we have to call it a night?
Steve gestures at the dark sitting area. We can watch TV if you want. Have some hot chocolate and talk.
He hesitates. Or is that not how it goes?
Steve's going to wreak absolute havoc on his heart.
Amen.
Sure we can.
Tony steps back towards Steve and stifles a laugh when Steve offers his arm, all gentlemanlike.
Tony slips his arm into Steve's and lets Steve pull him along.
Yeah, let's do that.
The end.